my friends. This is Dale Stewart, and you're tuned into Nature's Edge. Today's going to be kind of a special show. You know, over the years, I have had a lot of people ask me a lot of questions about what does it take to be an explorer? What's my background? What types of expeditions have I done? What kind of food do I eat on expeditions? Well, today I'm going to answer all those questions or as many questions as we can possibly get to. And to assist me in this is the super-duper producer of Nature's Edge, Miss Leslie. You have your microphone on there, Leslie?
I do.
Welcome to Nature's Edge.
Thank you.
And thank you for being the person to ask the questions, I guess is the way you would put that.
Oh, I love doing this. In fact, this is a great one to start with. The first one everyone wants to know is, what was your childhood like? How do you end up the way you are? What was that childhood like?
You know, it's crazy. I get asked that question a lot of times, and I really don't understand it. But I had a great childhood. I was a very active kid, had lots of interest besides the outdoor world, and they included, you know, football and baseball and track, and, of course, always, hunting and fishing and just spending time outdoor with my family. I had a very outdoor-oriented family, and that contributed to my sort of wonder of nature.
Okay, what second question, what types of expeditions are you known for?
Well, a lot of types, but I guess I'm best known because the last few years for really paddling really big rivers. In the summer of 2012, I became the first to solo paddle the water route of the Trail of Tears. It was a journey of some 1,380 miles, and it took me on to the Tennessee, the Ohio, the Mississippi, and the Arkansas rivers, and that's really kind of what got me known for the big rivers. And also, I'm well known for lightweight pack rafting expeditions and living with remote indigenous tribes that I meet along the way. And the pack raft is an amazing tool. And for you that don't know what a pack raft is, it's a small inflatable boat, and that I can carry in a backpack, therefore known as a pack raft. And it really allows me to combine a couple of disciplines. One is long-distance trekking with the option of always being able to do river rafting and add that into my expeditions. And water is such a great way to move through the natural landscape. If you can find a river, unless it's really a torrential whitewater, it does give you that natural break in the landscape by which to progress or move through it. Apart from pack rafting expeditions, I guess I'm also known a bit for the media side of things. I've done video documentaries and of course, the syndicated radio show, Nature's Edge. And by the way, thanks for listening.
Oh, definitely. What was your very first expedition, Dale?
You know, it's a good question. Let me think about that a minute. Probably when I was about 16 years old, I convinced my parents to let me explore the wetlands and bayou country south of New Orleans, including Bear Terrier Bay and Barra Terrier Island, which were used by the pirate, I can't even talk today, Jean Lafitte. Of course, this is located in Louisiana, where I'm from, and I used a P-Row, and I had an old Cajun guide, Mr. Elrod Surrett, and I'll never forget him. He passed away a few years ago, but he was a huge influence on me learning to paddle, especially in the bayous. And the P-Row that we paddled, for those of you that don't know, the P-Row is a type of cypress dugout that was used by a lot of the early Cajun, and it usually has a flat bottom. And the P-Rows are really designed, if you will, with that flat bottom to be able to move through shallow water or marshes, and you can easily turn them over to drain water after you get them out into the boat. So I guess when I was about 16, paddling the bayous of South Louisiana.
Wow. You know, a lot of people consider you're very lucky to have the opportunity to dedicate your time to the expeditions. How did you make this your career, though?
Well, my belief is that you make your own luck. Like many successful people, only got where they are where I am through a great deal of hard work, sacrifice, and perseverance. You know, I've always been fascinated by the wild and started really dreaming of exploring the wild and the people who live there very early in my life. The more inaccessible and distant from civilization, the more excited I became about getting in there and really taking a look around. And people also ask me about my motivation, and my motivation is really pretty simple. It's just an insatiable curiosity about the natural world and the culture of the people that live there. And I've been doing this now for, gosh, a quarter of a century.
Wow. What do you enjoy most about your exploring?
Probably the feeling of being in the wild, or the wilderness success itself. Being 100 miles from the nearest settlement and the connection that I have with nature when I'm out there. Many people believe that the drive to explore is part of what makes us all human. From, I guess, prehistory to modern times, our ancestors have always crossed great distances on foot and boats, backs of animals to find new lands. They've established trade routes, exchange ideas, and really ran into a lot of obstacles and rewards along the way. Not only do we explore geographically, we also explore, and I explore, ideas, art, music, science, space, emotions, ways of communicating, and life itself. Exploration to me is a way of learning that spans all time periods and all cultures. People are attracted to things they don't know about and have never seen, and I'm just like that. And I also seek knowledge and the resources that you really need to survive when you're out there.
Okay, I've got a question I want to ask you.
All right.
What attracts you to spending time with the indigenous people in the jungle?
I think really what attracts me to those indigenous people is really I want to know how other cultures live, how other people live. You know, we all grow up in sort of this little cocoon of who we are and our parents and our brothers and our friends. And for some reason, very early on in life, I wondered, is there more? Not that I was unhappy with the situation I was in. I just wanted to know how other people lived and sort of how they developed their skills. How did they get their food? What kind of houses did they live in? Were they spiritual? Did they have religious beliefs? And I find all of that extremely fascinating. And I guess that's really what has driven me. And I've been fortunate, Leslie, that I've actually lived with indigenous tribes on six continents.
Wow. And do you still have that passion to go back out and do it again?
I do, but it's changing. You know, as you get older, you sort of think about things in a little different way. And I'm really turning that attention a little more now toward teaching and sharing the knowledge that I've learned.
Is it because of the diet out there? What's the worst thing you've ever had to eat on an expedition?
Let me think about that, because I've eaten some pretty nasty things. probably fresh cow blood with a Maasai, and also horse blood with some Mongolians. And I'm really not a fan of slugs either, fried or baked or made in a soup. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, next question. I'm very interested in the connections we can make with the indigenous people through the use of primitive skills. If we learned about wild food and hunted, fished, and foraged on our expeditions, how would it change our relationship to the people we meet along the way?
You know, that's a great question. I've had that question asked to me before. I think it makes a dramatic difference. Really getting to know local people, indigenous or not, you need to really develop a very close relationship with them. And hunting and fishing is a main part of their life, and that's one of the ways you can connect with them. When we return, I will continue answering many of your questions about what it takes to be an explorer, a little more about who I am and how I got into this crazy world of adventure that I so love. You're listening to Nature's Edge with Dale Stewart, and we shall return after these brief messages.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Nature's Edge. This is Dale Stewart. Today we're doing something a little different. I'm allowing Leslie to ask questions that many of you have sent to me over the past few months, wanting to know a little bit about exploring and how I do it and why I do it and all those kind of things. So what's our next question, Leslie?
Well, this one comes from someone asking me a question about your show and about you personally. They want to know, what is it that attracts you to the jungle life?
Hadn't thought about that too much, but it's probably because you can see a complete ecosystem when you're deep in a jungle or a rainforest, and not all jungles are rainforests, but most rainforests are jungles. So let me say that. But yeah, you can really see a complete ecosystem when you're standing in the jungle and you look at your feet, you see the leaf mulch on the floor and the fungus. And then as you move your eyes upwards into the canopy, you see vines, you see parasitic plants of all kinds, and as you get higher into the canopy, you'll begin to see animals and mammals, and when you really get up at the peak, you even see flowers. You really see a complete intact ecosystem just from looking from your feet up into the canopy. In a proper jungle environment, you really get the sense that all the component parts are present right there in front of you. And that's why I find it so thrilling to be out there.
Well, when you're on your expeditions, the food experiences you've had, has it changed your thinking when you return home?
Yeah, it has. I tend to eat, not miss any meals. And one of the reasons is you never know when you're going to have your next meal, and especially in the expedition world. So I eat. The other thing that I think being an explorer and being out there oftentimes has sort of trained me mentally to do is not to waste food. I literally, even if I'm eating at a buffet somewhere, I'll only take as much as I think I can eat at that time, and so I don't tend to waste foods. And I think that's all a good thing.
I think so, too. We all know that you're an environmentally concerned explorer. What are your long-term goals and hopes in that area?
Boy, I think one of the things about expeditions that has become apparent to me is this idea of sort of need versus want. And on trips, I obviously use a lot of resources to get to the places. I try to mitigate those as much as possible once I land and once I'm on site. But you're living without a lot of stuff for a long time when you're on an expedition. And you really realize just how little we need to live and survive and to be comfortable. So I hope that philosophy will permeate through everything that I do in the future on an expedition and at a personal level. But my goal is to continue to tell the stories of these places that I visit. And I think that's evolving to a more substantial use of media, video, radio, images, because these are all powerful tools. Being able to connect with people in real time. I found, you know, not everyone has the ability or even the desire to go into many of the places that I go into, but it doesn't mean that they're not interested in it. I want to continue to use my expeditions to talk about the big issues of that's going on in the world today.
Dale, would you have been able to do those expeditions on every continent without your goals setting goals?
Boy, that's a great question. I'd have to say no. It might have been technically possible, but also extremely unlikely. Combining the love of the wilderness exploration with a structural goal based on definable parameters was what pushed me along when I encountered challenges along the way. In other words, when I wasn't quite sure I could do it, I knew that I had a goal that I wanted to accomplish, and that would drive me to take that next step.
Who do you admire in terms of people doing meaningful exploration?
Wow. You know, when I was very young, I read a lot about the old explorers from Shackleton to you name it. Even some of the early explorers like Magellan and DeSoto and LaSalle and and all those people, but I'm really a fan of all adventurers and explorers. The idea of pushing your physical and mental ability is really interesting to me. I'm not doing anything original in terms of using expeditions as a tool, and I really love what other people are doing today, and I try to follow as many expeditions that are going on around the world as I possibly can. And all of our experiences are personal to each individual that's doing expeditions. And there's a lot of room for different perspectives out there in the adventure world.
What parts of that world have you explored?
You know, I'm one of the luckiest guys in the world. I've lost count of the countries I've been to, but I've been to almost all of the diverse geographic locations, from jungles to desert to mountains to wetlands and swamps. And I've been to both the Arctic North and the Antarctic South. And I've been to the North Pole and the geographic South Pole. And so I'm very lucky in that way.
What type of preparation do you have to do for your expeditions? Thank you.
There you go, Leslie. Well, of course, preparation is the key. It takes a truly focused effort and many months and sometimes years of conceptual research. I believe it is the most important not to leave things to the last moment. I generally leave the last month to unexpected last-minute tasks, physical prep, and really enjoying time with my friends and family. And one of the final steps I do involves solidifying insurance and evacuation plans and undertaking medical testing and briefing. Let me talk a little about, you know, it's very difficult to find people to insure me. Mm-hmm. Because of my lifestyle. But on every expedition that I do have types of insurance. For instance, I have insurance where if I'm severely injured, that will pay to fly me back to the United States or back to good medical care facilities. And I have physicals about every 6 months. Even when I'm not planning an expedition, one of the reasons for that is because many of the countries and many of the places I go, there are a lot of parasites, there are a lot of viruses, there are a lot of other things which have a fairly long incubation period. So about every 6 months, I go have blood drawn and get my checkups. And then, as I said, one of the other things that I do are briefings. I'm a huge believer in research, and I will always receive briefings from other adventurers, other explorers, other people that I know that have gone into an area of the world that I plan to go into.
Well, all that brings us to the next question. What about your corporate endorsements?
Well, endorsements, they're a critical part of a long-term career in expeditions, and I really cannot do what I do without them. But there's a couple of simple rules that I stick to, and I get asked this question a lot because everybody would like to get great gear given to them and clothing and everything else. But I only work with and promote products that I'd buy myself if they weren't furnished to me. And then when I talk about those products, it's really the truth, and the public can believe what they're hearing from me. And I don't spread myself too thinly and dilute the sponsorship pool in search of just publicity and money. It doesn't work that way. I pick a few great brands. I work very hard for them, and they ask me to, and I say no to the rest. So, yeah, I couldn't do what I do, and I don't think any people that really make a living doing expeditions could do what we do without those corporate sponsors.
Well, it's time to take a break, but when we come back, I want you to think about this. What's the most dangerous situation you found yourself in out in the wild?
Be glad to discuss that. You're listening to Nature's Edge with Dale Stewart, and we will be back after this message and answer that question. I got to think about that one a little bit.
I see you compare
returned. I'm Dale Stewart, and you are listening to Nature's Edge. Leslie, you asked me a question right before we went to break about the most dangerous situation. Was that the question?
Yes, it was. What's the most dangerous situation you found yourself in out in the wild?
I've been in a lot of them, but I've really only been in one that where I almost died. So we'll talk about that one.
Okay.
I got dengue fever several years ago when I was in Central America. I think I was actually walking the Mayan Trail between Belize and Guatemala. And dengue is a really painful, debilitating mosquito-borne disease. And I got a very high fever and suffered a seizure. And, you know, I've talked about this many times in the past, but when I do my expeditions, I'm alone out there. I'm a solo explorer. So I go in alone, and I go in knowing that things like this can happen. But this was a tough one, and I was very lucky that a group of indigenous hunters and actually were Mayan found me and were able to get me back to a local mission. There was if I recall correctly, it was an orphanage mission that was run by the Methodist Church. And when I got back there, they were able to contact a helicopter or contact someone. I was pretty much out of it at that time and was able to fly me into Belize City, where they had some pretty good medical facilities. And actually, after several weeks of recovering, the doctor told me I was literally a matter of days or hours from death's door. So I was extremely lucky, and I guess that was probably the most dangerous physical thing that's ever happened to me out there. And man, I've never been so sick in my life, Leslie.
Was there a part of that you don't remember? I mean, is there a time that you just don't remember
any
of
that? Yeah, there really is. I mean, I do remember. I remember having the seizure, and I really thought, "Man, this is it." And I remember having the fever. I didn't know what was wrong with me. Dengue is, if I had to describe it, it's like the flu on steroids. It is just everything hurts, and it is a terrible, terrible disease. I was fortunate because some of the dengue is also considered one of the hemorrhagic fevers. It's sort of in that same world, if you will, of things like Ebola, which is everybody's going around right now. And so it's very difficult. And also, I was very fortunate that I didn't get that it did not get into my brain, because that's the one that a lot of people do not recover from. But no, I don't recall a lot. I do remember being carried on a guy's back to the mission, and I don't even know how far, or if that was a matter of days, or if it was a few hours. I remember I remember seeing a lady at the mission, and I remember her washing my face and cooling me down. I think they were trying to get my fever down, and I even remember them putting me in a creek of cool water to lower my fever. And then I don't really remember anything until I woke up in the hospital.
So you actually owe your life to some indigenous people, hunters.
I do. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah. These hunters really, if they had not come along, I literally, Leslie, don't know that I would have survived that.
Mm. When you're doing the expeditions, what are you seeking, Dale?
Oh, that's simple. Knowledge. I want to learn. I have this great thirst for knowledge, and the older I get, it's still there. But I also want to be able to share that knowledge. I want to talk to people about those experiences and what I've seen, because I do know that a lot of people don't go out there, and I have a lot of people say, "Boy, Dale, I wish I'd have gone with you." No, you don't. It's tough out there. But yeah, knowledge. I'm a seeker of knowledge and truth.
What are some of the modes of transportation you've used to get to these different places?
I get asked that a lot. But, you know, above and beyond the obvious, you know, the airplanes and the automobiles and motorcycles and, of course, boats. You know, I've used horses, I've used donkeys, I've been on camels, I've done at least two where I used an elephant part of the time, and of course in the northern, up in the Arctic areas, I've used dog sleds, which is not as easy to do as one would think. I mean, I've have mush dogs, but it's a little more difficult than you think. The dogs actually were smarter than me, and one of the best lessons that I had was from an old Inuit, and he said, let the dogs do their job rather than trying to control them. And as soon as I realized the dogs knew the trail better than I did, it became became pretty easy to get along with them. But probably my most used mode of transportation is my own 2 feet. You know, I walk a lot. So that would have to be my own 2 feet. But you use whatever's available.
Yep. What scares you?
My wife can scare me. And I don't like, I don't like snakes. In other words, I'm lucky not to be worried by too many things. But, yeah, my wife. I mean, I've heard someone else say this before, and it couldn't be truer. I really fear no man, but I do fear one little woman.
Talk about fear. Is that a tool or is that a disadvantage?
No, it's a tool. And I believe, but also people let fear really inhibit what they're trying to do, whether they're trying to achieve a goal, whether they're trying to learn something. They let that fear really sneak up on them. And I'm asked all the time, should I learn to eliminate fear? No. First of all, I don't believe that you can eliminate fear, and nor do I believe that you want to. Fear, when you use it and manage it properly, is an extremely useful tool. It reminds you of where you are. It reminds you of what's going on. It makes you be a little more of a critical thinker. What you really have to learn is how do you reframe a situation? In simple terms, it means transforming a thought or a view from a disempowering one to an empowering one. In other words, if I see a snake and I have a fear of snakes, the next thing I have to tell myself is that snake is as afraid of me as I am of him. So I turn it from a negative thought that would paralyze me and I'd probably stay up all night wondering where that snake was to saying, oh, he's gone to sleep too.
Gotcha.
So yeah, people think fear is something to be conquered, and you have to be able to conquer it mentally, but you never want to lose it, Leslie. Especially when you deal in the world that I'm in out there. I want to stay afraid. I want to fear things because that keeps me aware. It keeps my situational awareness of where I am and what I'm doing. You become cocky in my world, you die. So people that tell me they're not afraid of anything, man, I don't want them anywhere around me.
I know one thing, and this isn't a question that someone's giving you or me, but I know the most important tool you use. Would you share that with the people?
The most important tool that I use is my mind, really. I mean, it's my ability to think. And having done this a long time, also, I've developed a certain amount of mental recall, if you will. There are very few situations, Leslie, that I've run into that I haven't faced in one way or another. And being able to call those up and trust what I'm seeing and trust what I'm hearing is an important thing, but I'll also question things constantly. Just because I see it and I think I've been there and done that before doesn't mean that this time is going to be different, because it seems that they always are. So, yeah, the mental aspects is really the best tool I could have out there.
It's about time for a break.
Yeah, I guess it is. You're listening to Nature's Edge with Dale Stewart, and we're going to be back after this message with some more of your questions. like that, Leslie.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Nature's Edge with Dale Stewart. We are doing something a little different today. Over the years, I get asked all the time questions about why I do what I do and why I am like I am. And we're trying to answer some of those questions today. And I've invited Leslie, our super-duper producer, to sort of read the questions to me, and I'm trying to answer them for you. So I'm kind of interviewing myself today. What do you think, Leslie?
I think you're doing a great job, Dale. And here we go with the next question. What is a typical day for Dale Stewart?
I don't know that there is a typical day, but my days pretty much involve travel, and I don't mean the good kind of travel where I'm deep in the jungle somewhere or on a river somewhere. In the last few years, I've been blessed to be invited to speak to many corporations and university MBA programs about leadership and decision-making and fear and team selection. And these are all lessons that I've really learned by being out there in that wild natural environment, and things that I've learned from other explorers and other adventurers. You know, the very unpredictable world that I'm often in, it's challenging and it's dynamic, and that kind of copies or mimics, if you will, today's business environment. And the wilderness is really an unparalleled venue for highlighting team and individual strengths and learning to compensate for your shortcomings. And of course, radio show prep. I have to get that in there too, Leslie. But my days are right now are pretty much filled with traveling around the country and talking about the great life that I've had. And I really want to continue that.
What advice would you give to people who want to get the most out of their lives?
Well, people that know me, and Leslie, you can jump in there on this too. I just refuse to grow old, and I don't want to ever be bored with myself or with the people around me or with other people. And I really believe that your preparation for healthy aging starts when you're pretty young. If you really squander your life with poor choices or living what other people think you ought to do or so forth, if you don't realize that also one of the most important words in the human vocabulary is no. And you've really got to learn to say no. And I'm still learning that from time to time. But I don't care if it's a relative, a loved one, even a child. If you can't say no and feel comfortable about doing it, I think it causes problems down the road. And I think so many people do what they do because of choices that other people have made for them. I was the luckiest guy in the world to have a mom and dad who understood that I sort of went to a different drum. You know, I have two brothers who both live in Louisiana, both live close to my parents, great guys, both are very successful in their own rights. And they also, they let me go and do my own thing. Just like, I don't think a lot of parents would have let their 16-year-old son get in a P-row with an old Cajun and start paddling into the marsh, but they did. They did. They trusted me, and they also trusted Elrod that he was going to take care of me out there. So my advice is do what you want to do. Find a way to do it. So life is short, and I hear people tell me all the time, you know, Dale, I one day I want to go to a jungle, or one day I want to go to the Arctic, or one day I want to do this. One day is tomorrow, folks. Just figure out how to do it and do it. And you can't let the lack of money stop you from chasing your dream either. You just have to get real creative.
You do. I know, you know, Dale, you and I sit down and we talk a lot. So I know the answer to this, but I think everyone needs to know this. Dale Stewart is only Dale Stewart because of the people that's behind you, like your wife, your admin people. People do things to enable you to be you.
Yeah, I mean, I have other people around me, absolutely. For a long time, I didn't. It was just me, and when I was out there, I was doing things. But yeah, I found that as I came back from expeditions, and as I sort of got known, or as I was on TV or on the radio or being interviewed, I couldn't do it all by myself. And I have a great wife who has been supportive of me. the end of October, we would have been married or will be married 30 years.
Wow.
And that's pretty amazing. People often ask her how she stayed with this crazy guy all these years, and her answer is pretty stock. Well, he's always gone. But
the secret to a great marriage.
That's it. And the greatest thing that Catherine ever did for me or has ever done for me is even when we first got married and I was doing this crazy exploring around, she never said, go get a real job. She believed in what I was doing and let me do that. So I've been fortunate not only from a mom and dad and brothers, but also from a great wife that's let me chase my dreams.
How did you find this wonderful wife of yours?
She picked me up in a bar.
Okay.
true story. If she was here, she would tell you that. Yeah, it actually happened. I was in Memphis, Tennessee, doing a fundraising event for the zoo there, and I met her at the Peabody Hotel. We had two or three dates and got married, and 30 years later, she's still telling me what to do.
Good woman. Good woman. Let's see. What is next for you, Dale? You have so much going on. What is next for Dale Stewart?
Well, from an expedition standpoint, for the past year, for several months, I've been really exploring America's largest wetland community, the wetlands of coastal Louisiana, my home. And they're really being converted to open water at a rate of some 30 square miles a year. And this is largely the result of maintaining shipping lanes and dredging canals, flood control levees, and withdrawal of oil and gas. And really, if this current trend continues, an ecosystem that supports the nation's oldest bilingual culture, the Cajuns and the Homa Indians, will mostly disappear. So as a result of that, I'm really developing a radio documentary, which you and I are going to work on over the next few days, and it'll be airing in the near future. And I'm also looking and talking to some people about doing a film documentary, and that's in the works. And both will tell the story of this ecosystem disaster through the words of the people who live there and work in the wetlands of Louisiana. So I guess I've kind of gone full circle. I've gone back to the wetlands of South Louisiana. Also, Leslie, I want to continue sharing my knowledge that I've learned after, over 30 years of exploring this great planet that we call home, and using lessons that I've learned out there to help other people, both in business and I'm fascinated all the time when I speak that so many people come out to hear me and to see my message. It still, even after all this time, it still fascinates me when I look out and there's literally hundreds of people sitting out there in the audience looking up and wanting to hear my stories. Again, most of them don't want to do what I do, but they do want to hear the stories. And that's a lot of fun for me and something I really enjoy.
All right, we've got about a minute left, Dale. Any final thoughts you want to share with your listeners?
You know, it isn't easy to do expeditions in the modern age, and you know, getting money together is hard. And I had to save up a little cash that I had to be able to do what I want. But I guess the main point, the one of the biggest things that stops people going off and doing these sorts of projects is not just the money, but feeling that the world has already been explored. That's just not true. There aren't any. There are still a lot of new stories out there, and there's a wealth of learning and learning from people that live in other cultures and other places. So it's important that we keep doing this. You've been listening to Dale Stewart, and we are finishing up. Leslie let me slip up on the end of the hour. So until next time, guys, I will see you in the wild, and keep sending me those questions.